Good evening. I'm glad to introduce you further into the questions of the first panel of the conference. We open with a panel entitled The Museum in Exile, posing the question, how does the condition of exile change the conception of the museum when the museum is dislocated and what its canon might be? This interrogation emerges from the transnational network that the research and exhibition Past is Quiet by Christina Curry and Rasha Salty share with us. The speakers of this panel will invite us to join them first with the case of the 1978 International Art Exhibition in solidarity with Palestine that was meant to lay the foundations of a museum in exile for the Palestinian people from Beirut on, a talk that Christina Curry and Rasha Salty will give entitled Occultal Cartographies, Tracing Networks Concealed in Lists of Artists and Speculative Exhibition Histories. Christina Curry and Rasha Salty are independent writers, researchers, and curators based in Beirut, also detectives, as you will hear. They are the curators of the exhibition that opened tonight, Past is Quiet. Among other projects, Christina Curry has curated the founding years, 1969-1973, a selection of works from the Sultan Gallery archives in 2012 at the Sultan Gallery in Kuwait. And Rasha Salty, among others, has been co-curator of the 10th Sharjah Biennial in 2011. Together, Curry and Salty are the founders of the History of Arab Modernities in the Visual Art Study Group, a research platform dedicated to the social history of art in the Arab world. The conference will continue with the talk, A New Cultural Model of Solidarity by Claudia Saldívar, current director of the Museo de la Solidaridad Salvador Allende in Santiago, in Chile. She will invite us to the foundation, history, and rereadings of this museum founded in 1972 in Santiago de Chile as an alternative museology based on the principle of solidarity. This matrix, this principle, was achieved by the donation of artworks within an extensive network of artists and intellectuals in order to build a collection, and also in regards of its political purpose to bring the arts to the people and overcome the elitist character of cultural institutions at that time. Shortly after its opening, this museum was closed due to the military coup in 1973. Nevertheless, the solidarity networks continue to be active and the museum managed to operate in exile. In fact, this model became the model of the anti-imperialist solidarity movement of the 70s that inspired the 1978 International Art Exhibition for Palestine. Before directing the museum, Claudia Saldívar also directing a public space, La Galería Gabriela Mistral, is an art historian. And at the end of the dictatorship, she made the first thesis on the topic of the Museo de la Solidaridad. I invite you to help me to welcome these two speakers and the first panel.
Thank you, everybody, for staying. Thank you for this lovely introduction. Her name is Paz Guevara, which is already an awesome name. But I can assure you she's a woman who does not take no for an answer, and it's part of the reason our exhibition looks much more fabulous than it was supposed to, because she got us incredible archives. Thank you, Paz. And thank you, Anselm. Actually, Walid Raad is, if there are arranged marriages... And let's not talk about the genders here, but if there are arranged couples, Walid Raad is the
matchmaker,
Between us. So, and we started, the study group was not really his idea, but he has a way of influencing. That's how Christine and I met. He told me I should meet this incredible person, and we decided, I think it was love at first sight, and we decided.
The journey began.
Yeah. Okay. The International Art Exhibition for Palestine was organized by the Palestine Liberation Organization's Plastic Arts Section of the Unified Information Office. It was made possible because of the passionate commitment of a number of PLO representatives in several countries, as well as solidarity networks between artists and activists around the world who supported the Palestinian Revolution. The exhibition presented the seed collection for a future museum in solidarity with Palestine in exile. destined to be itinerant and travel until it could return to a free and democratic Palestine, with approximately 200 works by 200 artists from 30 countries. In 1982, the Israeli army advanced on Beirut and held the city under military siege with the objective of forcing the PLO to leave. The building where the collection was stored was shelled, along with the offices of where the unified information and the exhibitions, works and paper trail were stored. All that remained of the exhibition story were the memories of those who made it happen and those who visited it.
The catalog remains the most tangible and comprehensive trace for imagining this exhibition. We conducted interviews with people in Beirut, Amman, and Damascus, and slowly began to piece together the large puzzle. We were furthermore intrigued after we realized that in spite of its scale and scope, the exhibition seemed to have all but disappeared from narratives of art history in both local and regional versions. The progress of our research was dramatically changed when we met Claude Lazare, a French artist living in Paris who had been intimately involved with the Jeune Peinture and was very close to Ezzedine Kallak, the PLO representative in Paris from 1972 until 1978. As well as with Palestinian militants in Paris during the 1970s. There's Claude up there on the left. And Lazare, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and he's with us today, but we'll invite him later.
Yes. Lazare was a key protagonist in conceptualizing the exhibition as a museum in exile and had mobilized a large number of artists to donate work. In June 2011, we rang the bell of his studio, and he pulled out three boxes from his personal archives, one containing photographs, one with newspapers and magazine clippings, and one with facsimiles and papers. He welcomed us enthusiastically, saying, "I've been waiting for you for 30 years." Yes, my voice, you know, it happens. This investigation began with the photocopy of a catalog. A significant part of our research was dedicated to discovering and or uncovering how some of the artists, agents, associations, and galleries may have been connected. Soon after we started our exploration, we came to understand the central role of Ezzedine Kallak, featured right there, in playing in the conceptual and realization of this exhibition as Museum in Exile. He was assassinated in Paris several months after the exhibition opened in Beirut. The genesis of the International Art Exhibition for Palestine has various roots. On one hand, the PLO established the plastic arts section to organize various kinds of exhibitions, as well as to promote the work of Palestinian and other artists producing work in support of the cause. In 1965, the PLO had established the Department of Arts and National Culture, also a film unit and a publishing house. The production of posters was deemed paramount. On the other hand, PLO representatives in a number of countries were actively engaged in mobilizing the support of militant artists and intellectuals. To some, Palestine became a metaphor for the injustice and despotism and imperialism. To others, the Palestinian struggle for self-determination echoed the struggle against the U.S. invasion of Vietnam, the Pinochet dictatorship in Chile, and the apartheid regime in South Africa. A number of the artists in the exhibition had been actively engaged with these struggles and causes through collective work. They produced posters, lithographs, staged exhibitions, events in public spaces, and participated in mass protests. Some artists had also been involved in establishing similar large itinerant exhibitions presented as museums in exile to incarnate support for a political cause. Sorry, one moment. Yep. So in fact, one version of the... Sorry, let's see if this is working. Nope.
It's working.
Okay. In fact, one version of the genesis of the International Art Exhibition for Palestine links directly to the Museo Internacional de la Resistencia Salvador Allende, or the International Resistance Museum for Salvador Allende, established in Paris shortly after the Pinochet coup by a group of international art critics, artists, and intellectuals. A number of these artists were also involved in establishing the Artists of the World Against Apartheid Committee, an exhibition which toured the world as a museum in exile. Both exhibitions and collections have repatriated to Chile and South Africa, respectively, and embody exceptional worldly legacies of political and human rights engagement in the history of art and museums, which we'll speak a bit more about later.
So the video that you're watching now is a video we decided to film shortly before we completed the conception of the exhibition at the MACBA. At some point, we felt that it was really important to be very transparent about our methodology, because we were like detectives. This is a history that's happened very recently. The 1970s are not so long ago. But because of the way history is produced, knowledge is produced about art today, it has become almost an unimaginable or an inaccessible history. So we took that page from the catalog where people are acknowledged. There are names of people, there are institutions, and after talking and interviewing some other people, we had some other names, and we kept drawing those connections. This process that you see filmed is something that we often did, maybe once every few months, just to make sure that we had the pieces of the puzzle were falling into place. We realized, I mean, one of the big questions was, when we were looking at the list of artists who donated work, the question is, why these artists and not others? But maybe the more important question was, what linked these artists? What was behind the list of names? Of course, after talking to Claude, we understood, for example, that the Jeune Peinture, a large number of the French artists listed in the catalogue were part of the Jeune Peinture. And then this is basically the process that led us. We tried to find the connections between artists, and we tried to find the links between the artists and the PLO. If there was a PLO representative that contacted them, if they had Palestinian friends, if Palestinian artists knew them or had any contact with them. So among the most important is the story of the Salon of the Jeune Peinture. I will just read you a small paragraph, and then we are really lucky to have Claude and Margot with us today. They have been just incredible support. They feel almost like family now. Since its establishment in Paris in 1950, the Salon de la Jeune Peinture has been a singular event, created by artists for artists, entirely free from the direct and indirect intervention of galleries and the market. The Jeune Peinture's organizational structure includes a general assembly that elects a committee to oversee its Salon every year. The committee is in turn mandated to select works. On occasion, a theme is assigned to the Salon. In 1968, the Jeune Peinture became more overtly militant, and the committee decided, for example, to dedicate the Salon to the victory of the Vietnamese people with the Salle Rouge pour le Vietnam. In 69 and 70, the Salon's theme was police and culture, 1 and 2. And hosted a multitude of artist collectives. Celebrating collective painting and direct interventions, the Salon of 71 and 72 were dedicated to the popular struggles prevailing in France. By 72, the Salon had become an eminently political platform and host to a range of artist collectives engaged in work around local and international issues. Claude Lazare was president of the Jeune Peinture briefly. He and a group of artists have gotten together and decided to write a book about the Jeune Peinture. We are very lucky to have him. We will invite him on stage. He will say a few words about the Jeune Peinture and about the forthcoming book. Please join us in welcoming him.
Hello, starting with a few words about my experience. I start being a militant in art around 68 during this movement, intellectual movement and the student movement in Paris. And I start with posters. Posters was very famous at that time. And after 68, I continue painting. But I was isolated in my studio, and I thought that cinema was more efficient to be a militant with art. And so I joined. I joined France in Vincennes, which was an important university for the revolution thinking. And I joined a comedian and a cineast, a filmmaker. But after a while, I was discussing of a relation. There was a continual relation of industry. So I went away and I found a group of artists, Front des Artistes Plasticiens, that was very close with me, engaged with different solidarity like Chile, like Vietnam, and other movement was doing for the artists about social security, about condition of the artist in the market, not being exploited by the galleries. But after a while, the ego of the artist explodes. So I joined another group, was very important. It was the Salon de la Jeune Peinture. It was more with painters. Salon de Jeune Peinture was a group of artists was showing every year paintings and having ideas how to transform the relation of the artist. And I said that because as we are talking about Palestine and Chile Museum, it's not something of the past. It's, for me, something that continues to live. And what I have remembers of those movement is something very bad. The critics are changing the history. The artists was talking, are talking now of this period changing so many things. So I phoned 3 years ago after meeting Rasha and Christine. I said, guys, contacting artists of that period, guys, what we have done is, I think, is important to talk about as we have lived it, not like leave the others talk about that. So we have a reunion after reunion, and we decide to do a book about Jeune Peinture, the movement where we was engaged in. And each one was bringing his own witnesses about what he did in this group, because he was working in collective of artists, talking, deciding. And for 3 years, and we have worked a lot on this book. And this book, by chance, is not by chance. It's a pity it's not ready now. It have to be printed in few days coming. But perhaps before the end of the show, you can find some exemplar here. So that I want to say, the past is not a ghost. The past continue now and in the future. Thank you.
So another another group of another collective, and this is how we came to research Italy. Claude started in the Jeune Peinture something called Collectif Palestine. So it was a collective of artists who were dedicated to doing work on Palestine. And the Collectif Palestine produced a long mural that was 6 meters long and 2 meters tall, and that was used by the PLO and various activists during conferences and events. And it's the sort of things that artists did. They painted banners and murals and for protests, for all kinds of issues and events and political events. And they came into contact with a collective in Italy called Archicoda. Archicoda was a collective of Italian artists in Tuscany who were very political as well. And among the things they did serigraphic prints. They produced events in public spaces around the causes that they supported, like Chile, like the war, like the struggle against the Pinochet dictatorship, the struggle, the opposition to the war in Vietnam. The Collectif Palestine, the Archicoda hosted the Collectif Palestine in Tuscany, and in 1976, there was a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon called Tel Ezatar that was under siege by Lebanese right-wing militias and at the time supported by the Syrian army. The camp was under siege. It was being bombarded. It was in the news. And the Collectif Palestine and the Archicoda decide for awareness raising to stage events in public squares. The photo shows a stencil portrait of the crushed face of a boy that they painted either on a canvas or on immediately on the stone. These are documents. The poster in the middle calls for attending this event. This is another view. They did this intervention in several small towns in Tuscany and in Mestre in 1976 during the Venice Biennale. They were invited by the Venice Biennale to do it. This is another photo. And then here you see Claude making a speech. And next to him with the curly hair is an Algerian artist, Rashid Qureshi, and two Italians.
A little detail I want to say about that. The community of Mestre have said, we don't want you paint on the street because it's very old stone. So we put a big banner, and we had to paint just on the banner when you see the Arab words on. And at the beginning, we was painting on the banner. But people around was taking the stencil, taking painting, and start continuing to do on the stones. And the police, nobody want to interrupt, and we cover all the place like that. For that, you have all the place covered.
So yes, at the end of the when it was the canvas was fully covered, Rashid Qureshi would write Tel Ezatar in Arabic on the stones. I have to say that for the Mestre also, the unions, les syndicats, the unions of workers were involved, various political groups were involved.
So our time is very limited tonight, and the exhibition allows you the time and space to kind of look through the other collectives and groups of artists that we have been researching, but we just want to highlight a few of them this evening and continue and tell you about these, again, the museums in exile, a little bit more detail about the Nicaragua and South African situations. So in 1980, during a festival in Rome that celebrated the first anniversary of the Sandinista Revolution, Ernesto Cardenal, a renowned poet and minister of culture in the new Sandinista government, met with Carmen Hua, a Chilean gallerist and cultural manager who played a major role in the International Resistance Museum for Salvador Allende. It was there that the idea for a museum in solidarity with the Nicaraguan people was born. Hua spearheaded the project, and a year later, an exhibition in support of the Nicaraguan people was inaugurated in Madrid and then in Paris. The invitation was to Latin American artists, mostly of whom were exiled in Europe, and Spanish artists as well. Many of them, again, were the same names that came up that donated work to the Palestinian exhibition, as well as to the Chilean initiative. And this is again where these projects, these museums in exile, tie together beyond just their structure, but the artists actually involved in making it possible and in donating work. The collection of nearly 300 works was sent to Managua in 1983, and it grew over the years. It operated as the Museo de Arte Latinoamericano Contemporáneo de Managua, and in 1985 it was renamed the Museo Julio Cortázar in honor of the writer. It was later operated by an association of artists from 1988 till 1994, and then after that things get complicated. The collection was claimed to be expropriated. It was dispersed. Some claim that many of the works were sold on the black market. Others were taken back by embassies for safekeeping. For the last few years, there have been claims that the Nicaraguan Cultural Institute will reopen the museum, and we hope that will happen.
So we will end with a happy note, because we gotta. Oh, no, sorry.
Just leave it.
Leave it, okay. So a video will play soon, shortly. So we had this when this notion of a museum in exile emerged, we learned that the Chileans did it and the Palestinians borrowed it from the Chileans. And then we realized that actually it happened also for the Sandinista revolution. We also learned that another exhibition was set up, run by artists based on works donated by artists, and was itinerant for more than 10 years, administered by two artists, Ernest Pignon Ernest, Antonio Saura. Antonio Saura is a painter, Spanish painter. Ernest Pignon Ernest is a French artist. Basically, they both used the idea and very much the network of the radical left and inspired from the Chileans to build a collection to show the opposition, the support of artists against the apartheid regime in South Africa. And the exhibition, the first time, was shown at the UN in 1979. I think the UN had declared that year the year of the struggle against apartheid. The exhibition toured the world. And when Nelson Mandela was released in 1992, and then the apartheid regime fell, after there were elections, the first free parliamentary elections in South Africa, and the parliament was supposed to convene, Ernest Pignon and Antonio Saura were in contact with the ANC cultural department, and the ANC decided that for that first session of parliament, the apartheid art that was in the building of the parliament had to be removed permanently, I hope. It was replaced with this collection. The collection was displayed there for the first time, and then it was given to the custody of a center called the Mayibuye Center, which in Xhosa language means return home. And the Mayibuye Center is an archive of the anti-apartheid struggle. It's an audio, print archive. It's fantastic. It's a small group of people, very dedicated, at the University of Western Cape. When we were in Cape Town, a photographer called Eric Miller documented the removal of the apartheid art and the hanging of the collection of the Artists of the World Against Apartheid. And we basically, from the photos, we basically made this video, this scrolling slideshow. Here you see that they placed, at some point, they placed the artworks in the in the seats of where the parliamentarians were supposed to meet. And on a happier note, so it's always important, very important for us to end with this, because we are both curators, researchers, but when we're dealing with history, that the traces of which are either elusive or no longer as available, when you have to rely on people giving you testimonies, sharing their stories with you, opening their drawers, their boxes, sharing their images, their photographs, people like Claude, hundreds of people, we feel that we are totally indebted to them, that we are right with them, that we owe them a debt of gratitude, and that they have a claim of authorship as much as we do in this production of history, you hear our voices in the exhibition because we claim authorship, but we are proposing a speculative version of a very complicated history, sometimes a wounded history. But we hope that it opens the field of possibilities for not only questioning the canon, but hopefully destroying the canon. Thank you.